Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Improv Chronicle podcast. I'm Lloydie. It's Tuesday, 8th September, 2020. As a form, the Harold is lauded by some and treated, well, less reverentially by others. There's no doubting, though, that it's had a huge impact on improv. But all these years since it was first invented, how relevant and how watchable is it now? Like many things, a lot of this debate can be put down to do whatever works for you and your team. But the debate around the Harold as a performance piece and training tool raises some interesting points. So let's go back to the beginning of the creation of the form for a little slice of history.
I'm Howard Johnson, Kim Howard Johnson. I'm the co-author of Truth in Comedy. I'm an improv dinosaur. I go way back to the first days of the Improv Olympic. A Monty Python colleague and founder of TheComedyLab.net, which is a TV writing program that's just launched online earlier this year.
So, how did the Harold come about?
At the Improv Olympic, as it was known then, Dellen Sharna had just started it. And I came along, and a few months after I'd started working with the group, with the class and with Dellen Sharna, there was some talk about doing classes, or doing shows, rather, out of the classes. Dellen Sharna had experimented a little bit. See, Sharna had worked with David Shepard. David Shepard was not very interested in doing shows. He was not very interested. He's not very theatrical.
He was of the Compass Players, correct? Is that right?
He absolutely was. David Shepard went all the way back to the very beginning. His main interest was more as a social experiment. You know, if you get a group of rabbis together and just put them on stage and just improvise together, what would they come up with? A group of cops, if you put a bunch of policemen together on stage, what would they come up with? And Sharna did the same sort of things with when she was working with David Shepard. It didn't turn out terribly well. They kind of went their separate ways by mutual agreement. That's when Dell came along. Sharna had met Dell. She'd taken some workshops with him before. And they started working together on improv. They didn't know exactly what they wanted to do. When I first started with Dell and Sharna, they weren't talking about performing quite yet. We were doing, you know, the usual exercises. Dell was, you know, we were doing scenes with Dell. Then we got into something called slow comedy. It was something that Dell was particularly interested in, but slow comedy would involve giving not your first immediate knee-jerk response to a statement, not your second, but waiting for your third. So it would take about, you know, 30 seconds to comment or to respond to someone's comment. And you came up with some really interesting stuff. Dell and Sharna sat down and just tried to figure out, how can we make this thing as bulletproof as possible? How can we make this stuff that had previously been a big gamble? Because that was the problem with long-form improv. When it worked, it was brilliant. But when it didn't, it just died. So they wanted to come up with a way to make long-form improv into a performance piece that would be acceptable, you know, to audiences, so that there would be at least a minimum standard. of quality. And the way they did that was Sharna took the whole Time Dash game, which was an old Viola Spolin game. It was basically, and as you guys I'm sure know, it was an interwoven series of three scenes that would just kind of jump through time, and it would make three stops. So you would have scene 1A, 2A, 3A, then you would have a game. Then you would have 2B, 2C, or 2B, 2C. Well, you get the idea.
Yeah.
That was a classic Time Dash game. And Dell would, or rather Sharna, would come up with all of these games. That's what Sharna did. She taught her students, her very beginning students, games. And we would plug those in to kind of like the act breaks, if you will. So that's how that was set up. And Dell would focus on the scene work with us. And that was great because there was no better person you could have working on the scene work than Dell. It really seemed to click right off the bat. I don't remember anything really terrible.
Fast forward to 2020 and a new improv theater is being set up in Milwaukee.
I'm Michelle Gilliam. I'm based in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I started doing improv a little over 23 years ago right here in Milwaukee. And I absolutely love it. I just started my own theater here, but I've also had the pleasure of being immersed in the Chicago scene as well as the Boston scene, and have performed in New York and hung out there quite a bit as well.
So with starting a theater and with your breadth of experience, what has been your approach to using Harold?
Being in Milwaukee, we're kind of the short form capital of the world is what I call it, because Comedy Sports has been here for almost 40 years. So I haven't broached the Harold quite yet, just because my town is so young as far as long form improv is concerned, that I have to look at how it's actually going to be approached.
Given that you are starting up, do you think it's still a relevant form?
I do think that it is still a relevant form. I think that the Harold is sort of like a nerdy form that most people should learn. but I mean, I don't think everybody has to like get good at it, or and even if someone doesn't learn it, I don't think it's a huge deal. But I think that to be taken seriously, like if someone from my Milwaukee community moves out to LA, let's say, when things are safe to do so again, I would want them to have, you know, those skills and abilities to have under their belt, but also be just as comfortable doing short form or all form or anything. Is it relevant still? Maybe not as much as it has been, but I do think it's still relevant.
Alex Keane runs the Sheffield Improv Jam in Yorkshire, UK, as well as coaching strike comedy in Sheffield and teaching workshops and drop-ins. He feels improv has moved on a lot since Harold came into being, and as a result, its relevance has diminished.
I think at the time when the Harold was being created, a lot of the concepts that that group were striving towards were kind of unknown in improv. This push towards more kind of emotionally connected scenes and exploring themes more than, you know, simply putting on something that was there to have a laugh. And the Harold was around at that time and became the format that where all of these things were manifest. And that was a hugely important moment in improv history. But I think it's presence in so many different courses and on so many different stages in the modern age is more of an artifact of that than because it is the perfect ideal form for improv.
How would you replace it then?
I don't know that it needs to be replaced necessarily. I think for me, there's with the Harold comes this. The purpose of it is this striving towards having these three seemingly disparate storylines or scenes that sort of merge either narratively or on a common theme. And that, when done well, is really impressive. But I don't think it's necessarily the only way to achieve those goals of having, you know, emotionally connected scenes and engaging storylines that deal with thematic topics.
Is there something to be said for the skills you learn in Harold, you know, callbacks and what have you, and the complexity of the format being a good training tool for people who do want to go on and do, say, a freeform montage?
I think they're definitely useful skills to work on, but I don't know that the Harold is necessarily the best way of teaching to make callbacks. I mean, if you want to teach someone to make callbacks, why does that have to happen within a framework of, well, you're going to have, you know, you're going to definitely come back to this scene in your second beat and then the next scene following that in the second beat? Why don't we just teach, well, you're going to do, here's an exercise. You're going to do three scenes, one after the other, and they're going to be unconnected. But in the third scene, you know, I want you to reference something that happened in the first scene. If you want to train callbacks as a specific, you know, comedic device, you can teach that independently of a much broader structure that comes with its own huge set of baggage.
But Michelle feels there's a lot to be gained from learning and performing a Harold.
I remember when I was on one of my first Harold teams in Boston, just learning, you know, what it took for me to remember the beats and be able to do callbacks and be able to, you know, flesh things out in second and third beats was huge. After having performed, so, you know, all the first beats and everything in the group game. So I think that it helps with memory. I think it helps with, you know, if you're on a team for quite some time, I think it helps with, you know, the camaraderie and the chemistry of your teammates. I do think other things, of course, can do that as well. But I think it can help with a lot. And also, like I said, it's unfortunately kind of like a snobby or a nerdier thing. But I think that when you do kind of know the Harold, there's like, oh, there's that whole like level of in our industry. But that is kind of going away, which is really cool, too.
So what about people who have just never performed a Harold before? I spoke to a member of a successful team in Bangalore who've never performed a single Harold.
Hi, I'm Aarti, and I'm part of Improv Comedy Bangalore and The Adamant Eves, and I've been improvising since 2016. The Adamant Eves were part of Improv Comedy Bangalore. So we were first part of Improv Comedy Bangalore, and when we joined Improv Comedy Bangalore, we realized that there were equal number of men and women in the ensemble. And that's when Madhu and a couple of other improvisers realized that we could create an all-women improv ensemble, which would be the first in India and which would be amazing to have one. So in 2017, June or July of 2017, we met up and we decided to form this ensemble troupe. And this was just going to be an experiment of sorts in my head, at least. And I thought, we're all women and we love improv and we do improv. And let's see how everyone else responds to an all-women improv ensemble, especially with the stereotypes that, at least in India, that go around is that women are not funny and a lot of jokes are at women's expense. So how would an audience like that react to an all-women improv ensemble that do like comedy, theater, storytelling, all of that?
And what's the reaction been like?
It's been fantastic. So when in 2017, we were like, we'll do one show in 6 months. And there was a huge prep work to it, as if we were like holding a festival. And then now the Adamant Eves are just like, okay, let's do a show next week. Or let's do something next, you know, the week after that.
So is there a reason why you've never done a Harold or opted for other forms instead of?
So it also goes back to how we got into improv. And I can speak about at least the Adamant Eves, the all-women improv ensemble I'm part of. So all the learning that we've gotten is through instructors and teachers who have come and visited us or if we have gone out somewhere and learned something, we would do like an information dissemination with our group. So in all of this experience, we never had a teacher who delved deeply into the Harold. So we never really got to learn the Harold in that depth. So we never performed the Harold. But we had teachers who taught us things like the Armando, the cutting room, just open scenes, montages, etc. So we've been lucky that way that we've learned all those other forms as well. Sometimes I feel that we've missed out a little because we love the Armando so much and storytelling so much that that's become like our go-to format whenever we perform, because we love storytelling and we know that we'll do good when we do the Armando. But at the same time, I also feel that there are so many other forms and formats that I haven't explored, or the Adamantes as an ensemble hasn't explored. And it's just that one push and nudge, or someone telling us exactly how it goes, or someone just popping that question, hey, why don't we do this or that? So yeah, even though I love all the other art, all the performances that we have done, all the formats that we have done, I still feel that we can try other formats as well.
For Michelle, Harold is now part of a wide range of forms that people can learn and learn from.
I think that there was a time, you know, when it was obviously more relevant. I think that now our landscape is expanding, and it's expanding even more with online, which is pretty neat. And I don't think we're beholden to this standard that we used to be beholden to as improv nerds. I think that a lot of different styles are being respected, and yeah, you don't have to know what that is or do it in order to love improv, be passionate about it and want to perform it. And I kind of like that it's going away from that, because I definitely don't come from a traditional background of improv. You know, started in Milwaukee with just short form, and then went to college in Chicago, and then moved to Boston a little bit later on, and just all different types and focuses. I don't think we're as beholden to it as we once were.
As a form, one of the criticisms of Harold's, certainly ones that don't work at least, is that they're not very easy for non-improvisers to understand. Here's Alex again.
There's a piece of music, Classical Gas, which was like a very minor hit in the 1970s, but it's become incredibly popular with classical guitar players, because playing it on the guitar, it jumps through so many different styles and so many different keys and different kind of elements of music, that it's this huge challenge to play it. But it's only really popular among guitarists. And if you hear it without having the context of it, it can almost sound, some performances of it sound like just this big jumble of stuff coming at you. And I kind of feel like the Harold is a bit like the improviser's version of Classical Gas. You know, it's this thing that's incredibly fun to do and show off your technical prowess. But you wouldn't necessarily want to bust it out at a karaoke night or something.
But for Howard, when it comes to watching Harold's, as with most forms, I suspect, it's all down to the skill of the performers.
I think a Harold is as good and as worthwhile and as valid as the people that are performing it. And I think you could say that about most people. I'll bet if you saw, you know, brought back from the grave, John Belushi and Harold Ramis and people like that to perform a Harold, I'll bet it'd be a pretty good Harold. And I bet a lot of people would, you know, really enjoy that and get something out of it. If, you know, it's people that aren't terribly inspired by the form and are just going through the motions, yeah, it's probably not going to be anything you're going to want to sit through. So I think it's totally dependent on the people that are doing the Harold.
You'll be able to see shows, take classes with, and find out more about our participants in this episode by following the links in the episode show notes. Next time on the Improv Chronicle podcast. Accents and impressions. Some people can do them, and some of us struggle rather a lot. How useful are accents and impressions when it comes to improvising on stage? How can we use them respectfully? And what on earth can we do when most people can't tell our French accent from our Australian? The Improv Chronicle podcast is produced and hosted by me, Lloydie James Lloyd. You can help the podcast right now. Please subscribe and rate us in your favourite podcast app. And if you have an idea for a potential episode, go to improvchronicle.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.